Welcome to the Revolutionaries of Wellbeing podcast. I'm host Sarah McGuinness. The Revolutionaries of Wellbeing, or RO, helps leaders to be change makers and to create better workplaces. With a community of champions from organizations around the globe, RO is dedicated to helping you to develop your professional expertise, access practical tools and resources, and network with peers and experts to meaningfully improve wellbeing. These interviews are recorded as part of our monthly Wellbeing Wednesday webinars and are designed to inspire, share ideas, and raise awareness of important issues we can all take action on. Bullying behaviours and attitudes can be extremely damaging. So what do you do if you have a bully at work? What can you do to proactively change their behaviours and the culture they create? And what assistance and support can you provide to the person who's the target of those behaviours? In this episode, we're joined by workplace bullying specialist Michael Plowright, founder of Working Well Together. We'll discuss all things bullying and prevention and what you can do to address this important issue in your workplace.
For many people, I think, who end up specifically working in this space, just like myself, there is usually a backstory of experience, you know, and I'm no different from most other people who specialize in workplace bullying. You know, so I was in a workplace, experienced some pretty, you know, average behaviors, and it's that thing. And you know, and at the time I was in middle management. Fundamentally, you know, people don't necessarily talk much about managers being bullied, and I ended up being this meat in this particular sandwich in terms of being, you know, both bullied ultimately from below and from above, which really had a negative impact on me. And when we talk about workplace bullying and its impacts, you know, we talk about, you know, some serious consequences potentially from, you know, from the lower end anxiety and stress through to post-traumatic stress disorder type symptoms and suicide ideation. And you know, and I can say that I've been there in relation to my bullying experience. And but fundamentally what that did was that it gave me the drive, it gave me the passion to promote change and look at how we can actually do things differently. And I was looking around at my own management colleagues who weren't managing bullying at all in the workplace, weren't creating safe, weren't creating well workplaces. And why was it that? Was it not understanding? Was it not stepping into the shoes of potentially people who, you know, they're using potentially using extremely negative behaviors type of stuff? So that's what gave me the drive and the passion. And then, you know, from there, what happened was that I thought, well, okay, how do we develop some real strong strategies in the workplace to be able to change the culture, to build positive, successful workplaces so that people can stay well, that people potentially, you know, fundamentally for me, it's about, you know, work is, you know, a means to also enjoying the rest of your life. You know, you spend a lot of time at work, but how can you actually make sure that you're able to enjoy enjoy the rest of your life? And you can't do that if you're suffering from some significant injury from workplace bullying. So, I mean, that's my story in a nutshell. And so here I am today.
Fantastic. I think it really is interesting that lived experience is so powerful, isn't it? And it gives you a different lens on some of these things, and a way of appreciating it, and perhaps a way that if you hadn't experienced it, you might not understand. Mm. I'm interested, you know, when we're defining bullying, because it's such a wide spectrum of behaviours and actions and everything in between, isn't it?
Absolutely. Look, and this is the thing. I mean, fundamentally, you know, bullying is relatively similarly defined across the globe. And when I was looking at, you know, some of the definitions in the New Zealand work, you know, you talk about, so for example, I think it was Employment New Zealand, you know, there are the three key components which make something bullying. One is that it's repeated, unreasonable behaviour that creates a risk to health and safety, be that physical or psychological. And this is the real challenge. I mean, bullying is so complex because it's a subjective experience in so many ways. You know, I can have somebody turn around and you know, take me into an office, give me feedback, And I can take that in a way that's negative, particularly if it's not framed in a positive way, you know, whereas somebody else will brush that off type of stuff. But then a completely different experience of bullying type behaviors, you know, like the isolation that you might get in a workplace or gossip, you know, might undermine a person. And that has a greater impact on them. So there's this real high level of complexity of how this will happen to or happen to all of us type of stuff. And as I say, you know, if we're trying to look at bullying from a very pragmatic point of view, I often turn to people and say, well, think of your picture. You know, these days we talk about pictures in terms of having pixels. Bullying is like a photo. It's a range of different colors, different types of behaviors that come together to create this overall picture, and usually across a period of time, you know. And when, because when we talk about bullying, you know, some people can be bullied for, you know, over a period of weeks, you know, usually it's not bullying unless it's been going on for a number of weeks, through to a number of years, you know. And I remember, you know, one of the guys who I spoke to and worked with once, we were talking about, you know, he had been bullied in the same workplace for 8 years. He was a storeman, and he put up with his behavior. His, you know, supervisor came and abused him, you know, told him to do things rather than worked with him in a cooperative way, you know, was, you know, doing all this stuff across such a long period of time, and he did nothing about it. And it was interesting. And I said to him, you know, well, what was it that meant that you didn't do anything about it? What stopped you? And he said, well, in my younger days, I was seen as being responsible and wasn't able to hold down the job. So if he had have turned, his theory was, if he had have turned around and walked out, he would have been seen to be irresponsible. You know, he also had a young family to support at the time. So he didn't actually, you know, turn around and look for a different job because he felt he needed to support his family as well. And if he didn't, you know, if he left, would he get a job elsewhere? So for 8 years, he put up with this behavior. So it's such a complex interaction. And the interesting thing was that it ended, this particular circumstance ended when the young guy turned around and he punched his boss in the face. He said, I punched my boss in the face twice. And he said, I know that this was wrong, but he lost control. He couldn't, you know, control himself. And this is the thing. Eventually it will get to all of us type of stuff. But the key thing I look at here is that the boss then wanted to press charges with the police, and all the colleagues stood up and said, no, you can't, because you've been giving this guy hell for 8 years, you know. And so he didn't. But what that also said to me is that for 8 years, people in that same environment had seen what was going on but did nothing to intervene, which was the biggest tragedy of all. And this is, you know, where in future we can, you know, build, when we build well workplaces, we're talking about building cultures where people will stand up together as a group and feel safe to do that, to be able to stop these type of behaviours. Sorry, that was a long answer to a short question in some ways.
No, it's great. And do you know what? I've written about 5 follow-on questions I'd like to ask. So now I'm going to have to just sort of select which one. And I can see there's some questions coming. So we will touch on those in a second. Yeah. I think I will go firstly to the visible versus non-visible behaviours that I was thinking about, because there's that real passive-aggressive. And so in some ways, when we're talking about bullying, how do people work out what's just a personality clash, a bit of a conflict, versus something? I mean, if you're being punched or there's words being thrown about all the time, that's really visible. People can see that. How do you manage that? And how do you start to pick up those signs and symptoms?
Well, the first thing I say, I'm going to start with the punch thing. At the end of the day, physical violence, if it's from a person who's bullying, is not bullying. It's physical violence. It's a crime, and it should be reported to the police type of stuff. But when you look at it, it's really quite interesting, and it's quite complex. And the thing that I talk to people about is, because when a person's bullying, and I'm going to take a step back, when a person is being bullied, right, we tend to make excuses for that person. We tend to say to ourselves, oh, you know, maybe they're having a bad day. But hang on, how often do they have to have a bad day before it's a problem, right? Or maybe I've done something to bring this onto myself. Or if I actually do anything, I'll I'll actually get punished for it. So we keep on making excuses in terms of behavior, right? And this, and the way this leads to the question you're asking is that fundamentally what goes on when a person is being bullied or being targeted with negative behavior, we feel something in there, in our gut, right? But the thing is that we don't actually act. And going back to that whole subjective type of conversation that we were just having, if somebody does something that is rubbing us and going against the grain in the wrong way, our thing is, or my thing is, I should say, is instead of ignoring that gut feeling, that's the perfect time to act. Because when we talk about bullying, bullying is, you know, usually starts with low level type of stuff and then increases over time. You know, the behaviors become more and more harsh. They become more and more, you know, they go from, you know, maybe monthly to fortnight to weekly to daily type of stuff. If we ignore that, we're then allowing the opportunity and the door to open to be bullied and then get injured. So what we want to do is we want to think very differently about what's the behavior that's rubbing up against me and act at that early stage, right? So there's in when we talk about visibility, when we talk about subjectivity, it's when a behavior is actually impacting us is when we need to do something. Because as I said to you before, what might be inappropriate or poor behavior for me might be completely different from somebody else. But we've got to learn to recognize and act when we are feeling in that way. The challenge is, of course, workplaces who don't create the environment to be able to raise the concern in the first place.
That's huge, isn't it? Psychological safety. Because as you were speaking to that, I was thinking there's a great deal of this that sounds like people internalize. So if there's been an interaction that hasn't gone well, people internalize and say, I must not be okay. I must have contributed. Rather than the behavior that was here is not acceptable. Yeah. And I'm going to lay down some boundaries or some things around that. But that psychological safety is key, isn't it? I mean, and how do you start to bring that in an environment where there is some of this bullying happening? Because that's quite difficult to start introducing, you know, trust. When there are things that are so anti-trust happening in that environment.
That's the real challenge that we have is that in any environment, firstly, you know, at the end of the day, it starts at the top. You know, there's a saying that I've heard many times that the fish rots from the head. You know, many of us might have heard that saying before. And unless, you know, senior executive and management are going to create that culture and start with that culture, then it's not going to flow down. Because at the end of the day, when we talk about psychological safety is about that whole concept of, am I safe to raise my concerns without being punished, without being ridiculed, without, you know, consequence type of stuff? So if we don't have that in our workplaces, if executive management aren't starting at the top and flowing that down, then it's not going to change. But this is the challenge, right? And this is the key for anyone who's in management, right? Because you can go into an organization and you can see that there are different teams, and different teams will have different cultures within them. Some of them will have psychological safety, some of them won't. You can impact that as a middle manager and create psychological safety within your team, right? And so there's the opportunity for, you know, that manager to say, look, if there's a problem, come and talk to me about it. I really want to learn. I want to know. And I want to actually change things. But of course, the key to that is being able to or following through and doing things that are actually going to have a positive impact to show people that you know, you're going to walk the walk, as the saying goes, not just talk the talk. There's a whole range of things, but at the end of the day, it's ideal if it starts at the top. It doesn't always have to be, but, you know, your organization isn't going to start breaking down that until you start creating those opportunities. You know, and you talk about, some of the best CEOs I've worked with have been the ones who have had an open door where staff can also come in and see them and say, look, you know, hey, this is the challenge I have. you know, CEOs who make themselves accessible. You know, there's a number of stories, and I can't remember specific ones at the moment, but, you know, where you've got CEOs going into the lunchroom and having lunch with their, you know, their teams and saying, hey, tell me what's going on. Or just say, you know, just introducing themselves first and getting to know their staff so that when something goes wrong, they do feel comfortable to have that conversation. Mm. So it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, so that visibility makes such a difference, doesn't it, for that trust in the mm-hmm. leadership group. Just a slight change of direction, thinking about the people who are doing the bullying behaviour themselves. In your experience, how much insight do they have into the fact that they are bullies and that is a behaviour that they're bringing into the workplace?
Look, and there's a whole range, there's a few different sort of, you know, scenarios when we talk about people who bully, you know. And one of the most common is, and the one I like to challenge the most is when we start calling people who bully, you know, snakes, psychopaths, narcissists, blah, 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 because we're recreating stereotypes, right? And we're creating this picture of people who use bullying type behaviours can't change, right? And look, and let's be quite honest, there are some people out there who use bullying behaviours who cannot change, or if they are going to change, are going to need a significant amount of psychosocial therapy or psychological therapy. You know, your true narcissists, your true psychopaths, right, will not be able to change on their own without, you know, therapy, fundamentally, right? But there are a group of people who, and I work with this in terms of I do this thing called boss whispering coaching, abrasive leadership coaching, right? So I work with individuals, and those individuals come to me, and they've usually actually been pushed by their management to say, okay, you've got some skills that we need to work on, and then the people management skills. You've got some brilliant technical skills, and we want to support you to change your approach. So, you know, so I invariably work with them. We develop strategies. But what really tends to happen in these situations is it's like us all, right? So as we grow up, we learn things as children, you know. Then, you know, those same skills we take into the schoolyard and we start to develop them, you know, and some of those bullying type behaviours, we learn to manipulate. Some of us learn to manipulate, I should say, in the sandpits of the schoolyards, and we continue to refine those skills, ultimately to get what we need, you know, usually something like safety, security, feel loved, you know, attention, all of those sorts of things, right? The problem is then we go into the workplace and we continue to use the same behaviours. And by that time, you know, what we've got is we've got these blinders, right? We know one way of doing things if we use bullying and abrasive type behaviours, but we don't necessarily know that we're doing them, because in many ways we've got results from them in the past. And in many ways, a lot of employers, what they do is that they, you know, reward the person with a bag of money when they cause too much problems and say, hey, here's a bag of money, just go away quietly. We're not going to performance manage you, we're just going to pay you off type of stuff. So their behaviours become reinforced. But the people I tend to work with who use the in the coaching sense tend to not have that insight. Right. They don't see, because they've got their blinders on them. And part of the job is to actually get, you know, direct feedback. And I do, you know, 360 degree feedback. And I actually take quotes, you know, from staff, you know, and I de-identify them. But, you know, and some of them will say, when he or she rolls her eyes, his or her eyes, then it makes me feel, and I'll use this term, like shit, if I can be quite blunt, because that's the actual language that they'll use to me, the employee will use to me when they've actually got a problem with somebody who's managing them. I give them that, the manager, that direct feedback, and they're like, hang on, I don't mean to do that. I didn't think I was doing that. And that, funnily enough, can rip off those blinders. And then once you rip off those blinders, they see the impact, and then they can actually start the change process. So fundamental awareness is not there until you actually become specific. But then the other thing too is that we need to keep in mind is that if we're helping people change abrasive behaviours or bullying type behaviours, we actually need to help them learn new strategies. So, for example, in this coaching, the coaching method I use, we, you know, it's fairly regular every, you know, week or every couple of weeks. Okay, what's the strategy you can do to replace that? Okay, go back into the workplace. Now let's practice that. Come back and give me feedback. So how did that work? Did it work? Yes, it did. Fantastic. No, it didn't. How can we do it differently? So you've actually got to engage them in a learning process to be able to change. But you've also got to make them feel safe as well. Because if you're sitting there, if your management are sitting there with the whip and saying, you know, if you don't change, I'm going to sack you every 5 minutes, they're not going to feel safe. But this is one of the important things. Sorry, I've gone on a long answer to a possibly short question, but fundamentally, no, they don't see, but we do need to help them change, and that's part of what I'm passionate about too. So,
I think it's so interesting. A couple of notes I've written down for myself here is, you know, one, it sounds like for these people, it's really reprogramming the mental maps they have for behavior and how they are able to, as you were saying, you know, get the rewards or achieve what their end goal is. And so it's learning those new strategies. And then I was reflecting on some of the work that I've done with leaders over my career. And I can think of, you know, times I did 360s with leaders. And often, you know, as you said, there was just such blind spots. But it's so interesting. And this is still true, I think, of some of the work that we do these days with surveys and things. Everyone goes to the negative. And so sometimes it's really important to still go, even though there's all this bad stuff happening, there's still some good stuff happening over here. You know, it's not all bad. But I imagine, thinking about that it must be really confronting for these people if they had these blinders that had no idea that this was a behavior that they were doing. And then we're now asking them in that same environment to make changes and everyone's watching them and there's this kind of assessment. That must feel quite stressful, I imagine.
Look, it absolutely is. And funnily enough, I was having this conversation the other day, and it's stressful, but it's also about reinforcing those positives too, right? So if you're like, for example, the person I was speaking to the other day was talking about, we want this behavior to change. And I said, well, and he asked me, how do I engage that person? And I said, well, one is that you are reinforcing that you want them to stay. You want to spend the time, you want to spend the resources to get them up to speed because they are a valuable employee is one of the things, right? And the other side of things, which is really the great thing about this process, is that at the end of the day, it's done in conjunction with the person that I'm working with fundamentally, right? So that person who I'm working with identifies the people who they want to be interviewed, right? And I say, look, I don't want them to be your best friend. I don't want them to tell me all the good stuff. I want to hear the pretty average stuff, right? So you're building this relationship and they identify some of the people that they want to have interviewed, right? They go up to the person and say, look, I'm working on this. I want to be better. I want to improve the way I'm doing things type of stuff. I'm working with you. I'd really love your help by giving Michael some feedback type of stuff. So it gives them some of the ownership. So that helps take away some of the stress and anxiety because at the end of the day, if you're going to get change, we don't get change by, you know, it's the carrot and the stick. You know, if you use the stick all the time, then change is not going to happen. Obviously, it needs to be a process that they want to engage with. Some people, you know, would certainly turn to me and say, Michael, hey, this isn't my problem. This is everyone else's problem. And I don't want to engage in this process. And that's okay. That's fine. It's up to the employer then to go down a performance management approach or whatever, you know, to manage this effectively. But part of the ones who do engage is about making them feel safe. You know, I'm there to work with them. The employer wants to work with them to change perspectives. Actually, the people who get interviewed really find it a positive experience because all of a sudden they're saying, hey, this person's wanting to change. We're also seeing the employer wanting to spend the resources to help this person to change. And that's part of what I share with, you know, the people who I end up coaching is that there's a lot more positives in there because we go straight to that negative point, you know. Hey, what are the fears that come up straight away? Oh my God, I'm going to be judged. I'm going to be excluded. I'm going to be devalued. I'm going to be sacked. I'm going to lose my income. I'm going to lose, you know, all that sort of stuff. Well, let's flip it. and actually talk about the positives that this can have, you know, the building of relationships, the better outcomes that you can get at work. How and part of, you know, certainly part of getting change with people who use bullying type behaviors and abrasive behaviors is, well, what do you gain from this? If you have, you know, and one of the things people will come to me and say, you know, I don't go to that person because I'm afraid if I go to that person, they're just going to shout at me or they're just going to roll their eyes, right? If I can then turn to that person and say, well, do you want to know what the problems are that's stopping your, you know, you doing your role successfully or bringing in more customers or clients type of stuff? Is that in your interest? And usually they say yes. And it's like, well, this is a perfect opportunity for that. So there's many ways to engage them in a positive way. The fact is that we've just closed ourselves off to how can we work with people to change them in a positive way in the workplace rather than in a negative, let's just get rid of them. You know, you've got to get rid of the bully because they're just evil, which is just not true. They're human. We're all human. And you know, I'm a lover of human, you know, human frailties and human, you know, and the opportunities for personal growth and development. Sorry, I get excited by that.
Well, I think which actually links really nicely to one of the questions that's asked in the chat, which is, what happens if the exec is the bully? Maybe the exec, maybe the MD, the most senior person. What can you do?
Yeah. Look, and this is really a hard question because there is no simple answer to this, right? So unless the, you know, you've got a committee of management or board or whatever who has developed some sort of process for feedback that's going to allow for change at the top, then you're between a rock and a hard place. And look, and this is the real crappy answer that I really don't like to give, but sometimes I have to give. Sometimes if the person at the top of the tree is the problem and they're creating this culture within the whole organization, then you've got to weigh up whether that's the place you want to stay. And I, as I said, I know that's the crappy answer and I don't like giving it, but sometimes it's the truth. I mean, so you can, there are alternatives, of course, you know, and I think I was looking through the health and safety stuff over there in New Zealand as well. You know, you can make reports to your health and safety or safety authorities. If it's, you know, physical, you know, you can report to the police. I think you've got, there was an employment arbitrator or mediator in New Zealand. You can go down all those paths, right? The question is, you have to weigh up the checks and balances of what's the risk to yourself. And what's the resources that you need to use as an individual going down these pathways? And do you have that, you know, type of stuff? That's the way up. And look, and if you've been bullied or if you've been significantly impacted by bullying type behavior to the point of that you're crying, you're distressed, you're anxious, you're trying to avoid going to work, you know, all those sorts of stuff, you need a lot more resources to be able to go externally to try and fight and change a system in a workplace where there is sometimes, you know, sometimes the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, and going out, focusing on yourself, focusing on getting yourself well so you can actually live your life is what you have to weigh up in terms of challenges and consequences. So there is no easy and simple answer to that one, sadly.
Mm. I think it's actually a perfect lead into probably a broader conversation around, we've talked about the person with the bullying behaviours, but if we talk now about the person who's experiencing on the other side, from a wellbeing perspective, what is the sort of full breadth and depth of the impact of bullying, both on a person, a team and an organisation?
I mean, and so look, at the end of the day, when there is a bully in the organisation, everybody knows, you know, the research shows that the health impacts are on everyone. Who sees that, you know, and the interesting thing is, you know, there's people within the team context. Some people will jump on the bandwagon of the person who uses bullying behaviors, right? Because theoretically, some of those people think that they'll be safer if they join the ranks of the bully versus actually, you know, standing up for the person who is being targeted, or, you know, potentially staying neutral. But the truth is, and the research tends to point out that, you know, people who usually bully somebody, you know, eventually will get rid of the person that they've targeted, and then they move on to somebody else. And there's no guarantee whether you're the person who's on the bullying, you know, who's on the bully side, or, you know, just keeping your head down, is actually, you know, going to be any safer from that person who uses bullying behaviors in future. Because fundamentally, that person feels threatened, the bully feels threatened, and therefore they are looking for, you know, any signs of, you know, weakness that can allow them to step up type of stuff, right? But fundamentally, I mean, if we're looking at teams, you know, there is that sort of whole bystander sort of stuff. You know, there's a significant amount of research which shows that the more people step up and actually say that there's a problem, then the less likely that behavior will reoccur, or that the organization will actually listen and do something about the person, right? So, and fundamentally, if I go back to, you know, the coaching type of thing, what happens is that there's this realization in organizations. So there's informal feedback. So a number of staff go to HR or go to management, say, this person's a problem. And when the level of perceptions build up, that is what triggers an organization to actually act and make a difference. So that's the trigger point. So the more people that step up and actually raise the issues, then the more it gets addressed, and then the safer and the well and the better and the more well our teams become. So I think I've possibly lost the direction of the question a little bit. So
no, it's so true. I'm so glad you raised that bystander effect, because that was one of the questions I wrote down from much earlier, was that bystander effect. And then just going back to that, you know, if you are seeing a bullying thing happening, you know, and you are someone in a position either to make a difference, to say something, or perhaps you're not. Perhaps it's your manager and you're sort of further down the food chain and you can see this happening. What are some of the things that you can do? I mean, speaking up is obviously a big part of it, but how do you support that person as well?
Yeah, yeah. Look, and this is the fundamentally, I always say to people, you need to do what keeps you safe, fundamentally, right? So you need to assess the situation. And sometimes, you know, what you can do is some of that stuff, which is going up to the person who you saw on the receiving end of that behavior and just say, look, are you okay? Or it might be, you know, you jump on the internet and say, look, you know, I've done some research. Look, this is, you can speak to, you know, health and safety, or you can take this pathway. Because the person who, depending on how long they've been targeted with bullying is, they won't necessarily be clearly thinking and actually being able to identify strategies to get out type of stuff or to resolve the situation. So sometimes just going up and saying, look, I saw what happened. Are you okay? There's some options. This is what I sort of found if you want some help. So there's different ways that you can do it. Of course, you know, potentially you as a third person can always go off and sort of, you know, talk to the health and safety bodies yourself and say, look, this is what I'm seeing. What can I do? So you don't always have to go internally, you know, to find the answers. And what the key thing that helps us all is information. It's like, you know, if somebody's been bullied in the workplace, you know, what's been said for years is that the first thing you need to know is you need to know the organization's policy and procedure, right? But that's just simply information because it gives you options, right? At the end of the day, what we need to do is we can help each other by giving each other options. And that's helping each other to explore. It's helping, you know, put ideas on the table, all that sort of thing. So there's this really potential for it to be, you know, worked on and that person to be supported from the ground up. You know, it's interesting because I was reading some research just recently, and they were talking about people who it looked at people who had actually witnessed bullying and spoke up versus people who had not, or who had witnessed bullying and stopped and not spoken up. And what that found is that people who speak up about when they see and witness bullying behaviours will less likely be targeted by a person who bullies versus those who stayed quiet. You've got statistically, if you stay quiet, there's a greater chance that you're actually going to be targeted. sort of stuff. So this is a key thing that we're learning from the research is talking up, speaking up actually keeps us safer than actually staying quiet and pretending that it's not happening or just watching it from the sidelines.
It strikes me that for someone to feel confident to speak up requires a fair amount of their own confidence, self-esteem, ability to know that if I speak up and I'm on the warpath of the bully, that I'm willing to stand by what I've said. I imagine, and I'm just, you know, picking a generalization here very broad, but if I'm young in my 20s, I'm in my first job and I see this thing happening, I would be frightened to say anything. There's so much at risk for me.
Mm, absolutely. Look, and this is the real key thing. And it's look, when we look at apprenticeships, you know, and apprentices, you know, have a high level of bullying. You look at interns in hospitals and the medical sector, you know, there's a high level of bullying, right? And you don't have that confidence, right? And this is where, and this is, unfortunately, it's going to be a longer term process, I tend to think, is that over time, as we continue to give people, the young people, the message that they can speak up and this is how you can do it. And this relies on your external bodies, your health and safety bodies, you know, your government bodies promoting messages of safe and well workplaces. How do you achieve that? You know, you can speak up to hear. So giving young people the options. We know from the research that the older you get, the less likely you are to be bullied, right? And that's simply because as we get older, we become more experienced, wiser heads, you know, grayer hair at the same time, possibly. But fundamentally, you know, we gain life experience, and as we get older, and I know I'm sort of falling into this category, is I'm less likely to take crap from people, if I can just put it bluntly, you know. But you don't necessarily have that when you're younger, you know. And especially when you're just starting out, and let's say you've got a family, and now you know you look at mortgages at this, you know, million-dollar mortgages, and it's sort of like, wow, I can't afford to lose my job, and all that sort of stuff. As you get older, you know, you're sort of able to sort of offer that a bit more than potentially when you're younger, and it's one of the challenges. It's one of where the system has to come in and provide options, right? Mm. And this is the thing. At the end of the day, the key to actually resolving bullying is about giving people options, right? There's not just one option, you know. That's what we've got to start delivering the message on. Who can I go to? Where can I? Who can I talk to? What are my options? You know, am I confident? Am I safe to feel that if I leave, I can go and get a new job, you know, type of stuff. Education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it strikes me that, you know, it's very much that power distance, isn't it? As you get older, the power distance shortens because you've got more leverage. You know, yeah, perhaps the mortgage isn't so high, or perhaps you just don't care and you can go and do something else or whatever it is. I just wanted to come and pick up on a couple of questions that have come into the chat here. So, how can organisations better support the complainant when allegations of bullying are made? So evidence is often required to support the claim of bullying, which over a long period of time could be near impossible to provide. And I imagine, particularly if it's a passive aggressive, very difficult. So how do you address that?
Mm, yeah. Look, and this is really important. And part of the thing is that fundamentally in its description, bullying is a long-term process, and people who are injured tend to have been injured long-term, right? I tend to think that it's really key. If we're looking at support, we need to think about the concepts of trauma and the serious end of bullying injury, right? So the research tends to show that people who are bullied at work are twice as likely to be thinking about suicide than people who are not bullied at work, right? So that's the data. The data also indicates that around 55 to 60% of people who have been bullied are experiencing trauma-like symptoms, right? So we're looking at significant health impacts for people who've been bullied. And one of the key things that I sort of talk about organisations is that, one, you need to actually be thinking about the level of injury. We need to come from a point of view of assuming that a person who is saying that they've been bullied is injured is our first thing. And if we look at it from a risk management point of view, we need to actually start to get some strategies in there, which is around, you know, the risk mitigation type of stuff. we need to then be saying to that person, you know, to a certain degree, one, look, you know, you don't have to tell us how you are or, you know, everything that you don't want to. But if you want to, we would like to know, because we want to be able to help you and support you through this whole thing in a way that's going to work for you. Yeah. And, you know, and in some instances, that's going to be, you know, some people will need a psychological professional, psychologist, you know, to be able to support them, you know, through this whole process. But at the end of the day, the key thing is, for me, in terms of employers, you need to be open to have the discussion and to do that simple thing called listening. Listening to what's going on, consider what that person needs, and asking that person what that person needs, give them options of what they need to do. You know, okay, we know this person, you're having a problem with this person. Can we adjust your work environment perhaps so that for a period of time you're not going to cross paths with that person? Or, you know, we're going to put, are you okay if we move you to a different program? Or, you know, what do you need to recover and be well type of stuff? So from a support point of view, the organization needs to be more thinking around how to support that person. But when we're talking about this, and this is the thing I talk about workplace bullying investigations as well, is we need organizations and investigators to be trauma informed, right? So that they understand what this person is potentially going through, and so that they're not going to push it too far. And because what I've seen in the past is people go through this investigation process and they come out the other side more injured because of the process that's been put in place. You know, hey, you know, we weren't able to substantiate the outcome of the bullying. We don't know that it didn't happen, but we also weren't able to substantiate it. And the harm that that does. So trauma-informed practice needs to start becoming part of our thinking. You know, we've had, you know, and certainly in the past, or in the more recent past, there's been, you know, mental health first aid in the workplaces, but we actually need to think the next step in terms of complexity of injury that workplaces cause from a psychological point of view type of stuff. And how can we support them to get well again?
It's so critical, that trauma approach, and I love that idea of thinking about them as being injured, because all of a sudden, even if we start to use that language, it's aligning it to things that a lot of managers are already comfortable with. You talk about injury and, you know, return to work, and it's all this kind of established language, whereas bullying can maybe feel like this kind of other thing that happens over here that we just don't really want to talk about. It's not very comfortable. But when you start using that really similar language, then it's, I'm interested just within that. Is there other language that you found has really resonated with people when you explain the concept?
Look, I'm just trying to think. I mean, certainly in terms of when I talk to people about being bullied, and I am aware about using the term bully, or being he's a bully, she's a bully, they're a bully, whatever, you know, type of stuff, because as soon as you use that word, it starts to shut the conversation down. People go into defensive mode type of stuff, right? And so, I tend to find that bullying is one of the most useless words in the language, because people say, I'm being bullied, but what does that actually mean, and how does that help us resolve the problem? Okay, so it's like when I work with individuals who have been targeted, it's like, well, okay, so tell me what that means. Tell me how that feels. Tell me what that looks like. Can you give me examples of when that occurs type of stuff, right? Because once we start getting beyond that word bully, right, we then start to be able to say, okay, what's happening is that this person's excluding me from conversations, or they're shouting at me, or they're rolling their eyes every time I go up and ask the question, so I don't go up and ask the question type of stuff, right? That's helpful, but when we just use a generic term bullying, it's not helpful at all type of stuff. And I think this is one of the challenges. It's because we're just building up, in so many ways, I think we're building up this stereotype around bullying, and it doesn't really help us get down to the nitty-gritty and resolve it when we're actually just talking at a surface level from that. So I think that's part of the language challenge that we have and the conceptual challenge around bullying that we need to have. And it's sort of like, it's interesting, I mean, because there's a whole range of, you know, other terms I sort of start to think about that I use. And it's like, you know, and I think Chris, you know, asked me the question around, you know, Michael, you know, what word do I use? Do I use victim? Do I use something else? And what I've worked out is that, you know, and I've had a few conversations with people and I've said, well, I don't use the word victim, I use the word target, because usually they're being targeted by somebody. But for some people, using the word victim as for themselves is what they want to use. And so I've got to the point of realizing that, for example, okay, so what's the word that you want to use to describe yourself? And that's okay. But that also might change over a period of time. So somebody who starts out as a victim might become a target as they redefine and learn more about what's happened to them, and then might use something like, you know, whether it's survivor or, you know, thriver or some other words type of stuff. So so there's a whole range of terminology which in some ways I think we need to think about at a greater level rather than just have this surface use. You know, but we use language in at a surface level a lot, you know, and then all of a sudden someone has a negative reaction. We're like, oh, actually, maybe I did use that the wrong way in this situation. Yeah. It's a challenge of being human and language, isn't it, really?
It is. Well, it makes me think of what you and I, probably being consciously or unconsciously, perhaps with our backgrounds, doing all the way through this, is saying the person with the behaviour. So we've been separating the person and the behaviour and recognising that the two are not one, but actually, yeah, you know, this is modifiable. And this is a different thing with no value judgment based on it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's that whole concept around, well, if, you know, if we're telling, you know, you are the problem, you know, then you're the damaged one, you're the broken one, you're the one we can't fix type of stuff, you know. And look, and, you know, and certainly that whole sort of concept of the person who uses bullying behaviours is what I tend to use, or the person who uses abrasive behaviours, you know, which is your early warning sign of, okay, we're getting reports about abrasive behaviour. We need to stomp on this before it becomes bullying type of stuff. So, you know, it's a whole reframing, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I can see there's more questions, and so I'm going to invite you now. I've got one more question for Michael, and then if you've got any other questions that you'd like to ask, now's a good chance to put them all into the chat and we'll get through those. My last one for you is around the advice that you would give for people who are in these wellbeing management roles. If someone comes to them and they are experiencing bullying, what's kind of that initial, immediate thing that you can do to provide them with that compassionate support?
Yeah. Look, and I always tend to think that the first thing you just need to do is listen, you know. But I think, you know, and certainly it is important to also listen with a critical ear at times, because sometimes people are going through a whole lot of stuff, you know, and some of that experience is clouding their views, right? So it might be something that's happened at home, or actually there might be some real performance issues there. And it is about being aware that we're complex. People are complex. And to actually to listen first and then sort of ask questions and be curious. I mean, curiosity is the greatest thing that we've got, and to learn a little bit more. But then also, what's the practical solutions that you can potentially offer them and there? You know, at the end of the day, it will be for the person who is experiencing it to make their own choices. Everyone makes their own choices. But the starting point is listening, be curious, you know, and then from there you can help develop strategies. That's, I think, the key thing for anyone who has somebody coming up and saying, you know, I'm being bullied. Don't judge, you know, of course, you know, that's a key thing, because judgment will close people down. Just be the ear that validates, that listens, that helps.
Thanks again for listening today. It's been great to have you along. If you're keen to join the Revolutionaries of Wellbeing, head to rowellbeing, that's rowellbeing.com, and follow the links to sign up. If you're in our community, thanks again, and we look forward to catching up with you really soon.